Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Clay Maitland, and I'm the moderator of this panel. Coming after Martin is a challenge. But I think that our totally unrehearsed panel here can meet the challenge, which is, by the way, what our panel is about, industry challenges and the roadmap ahead. Some of you may remember a man named Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Minister of Defense, Secretary of Defense, as we say, in the United States, at the time the United States invaded Iraq. And he was famous for saying, before he got the sack, there are things that are known, and there are also things that we realize we don't know. These are known unknowns, and then there are the totally unexpected unknown unknowns. The theme of one of the themes of Maritime London, I noticed this week, is tomorrow's maritime world. And in a sense, I think our panel is about tomorrow's maritime world. Although, as I say, the title of the program of our panel is Industry Challenges and the Roadmap Ahead. Now, I realize some of this has been touched upon by earlier speakers today, but I have made a list for our panel members, who I will now introduce. On my immediate right is Mr. John O'Kelly Lynch, who is the chairman of the Bermuda Shipping and Maritime Authority. To his right is Mark O'Neill, president of Columbia Ship Management, as you can see. Nudorbeck Nielsen is CEO of DNVGL Maritime, perhaps the world's largest or second largest classification society. I forget. It changes. It's like class. It's like flag states. You can't tell who's on top from one minute to the next. And finally, at the end, is formerly Admiral, now Mr., I suppose, Frederick J. Kenny, who is the Director of Legal and External Affairs of the International Maritime Organization. What I'd like to do, for their benefit, is to recite a list that I wrote out but did not share with them, surprise, surprise, of what I see and what we might talk about at the option of our panel members, of these industry challenges that I've just referred to and that are in the title of our brief panel. We're very short on time, I realize, so I'm going to ask everybody to be concise and talk fast, very fast, so you can't even be understood. First of all, I think what we heard about, and I think it is a real challenge, is are we doomed to boom and bust in this industry forever? Is cyclicality and unnecessary ordering and the state of the order book, are we going during the next few years going to be seeing the same as we have been seeing, certainly since we've begun paying the bitter price of 2007 to the present day? That's one possibility. It was alluded to by Michael Parker, among other speakers this morning. Regulatory uncertainty and pressures, and where those are going. Emissions, ballast water, Tier 3, and various other changes that are being brought about by the regulators, by the IMO, by the world community, that impact upon shipping, ship operating, and the demands that will be made on us. The third thing is the supply chain disruption issue, which is a very broad issue. It can include Kim Jong-un, North Korea, Donald Trump, political and military events known and unknown to come, and of course the disruptions of a hurricane like Hurricane Harvey, which puts one of the world's major seaport areas, the Gulf Coast of Texas, an oil production area, completely out of action. Another one that I think we would like to look at is the means of propulsion changing for ships. The structure of the type of ship, the switch from traditional diesel fuels to LNG as a possible fuel in the future, not just a possible one. Autonomous ships, so-called autonomous ships, the what I call the floating Tesla, perhaps an entirely different form of propulsion that is more economical and cleaner than the ones that we even contemplate today. labor supply and the training of labor supplies. And this has a particular impact here in London. London is the home of the Cass School and other schools, particularly Cass, but others that train our future managers ashore, yourselves in most cases, people like yourselves who are here in London. Will we have the education base globally to be able to train the people who actually manage the shipping industry in the years to come? Given the bitter lessons of the past decade, there is a concern in the industry that we don't have the institutional memory that we need, and we may not have it in the future unless it's taught to us. The changing commodity picture. We are very dependent as an industry on China for in both directions, manufactured goods coming out, commodities going in. Will China and the Chinas of the future be there? So these are some of the issues that I have listed in my own little memorandum to me, and they are very much a factor in tomorrow's maritime world, as I say. I'm going to go down the line and start with, well, maybe I won't, but I will start with you, John, tell us, you're mostly in insurance, aren't you? Your background has been...
My background started in shipping with Erling Ness and involved modern carriers, Ovos, and everything. I was involved for maybe 15 years in the industry, and then I pivoted my career in towards private equity. I've always maintained an interest in shipping. I'm involved in various companies, in a chairman and majority shareholder in the industry. And I've now been asked to be co-chairman of the Maritime Authority to enhance Bermuda.
So I was wrong. I was totally wrong on all counts.
No insurance.
nothing new there. Well, tell us what you think of the list that I've just given. What would you like to
talk about? When I was talking to you earlier, Clay, you said, John, you sound like somebody who can come up with the black swan events.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, that's something I can add value in.
Okay. Want to talk about, speaking of black swan events, one of the biggest ones that I didn't mention was Brexit. I think everybody's heard more than enough of that in the last 16 months. But... it is the black swan event of today.
I think before we talk about future black swan events, I think it's very important for everybody to realize that we've just lived through one. Not since 1875 to 1910, when America became a superpower in 30 years, has anything like this happened in the world. We've been privileged to live through the birth of China as the second most industrial nation in the world and a global superpower in 30 years. And the dislocation that has created has been incredible. Now, China's going to go on. It's going to grow. It's going to have periods of recession. It will have periods of no growth. But the easy days of China's growth story, in my opinion, are coming to a close. And if you look further out the curve, you're going to find the effects of China's one-person family is going to drive their population off the cliff as this older generation dies out and there's not enough producing adults and consuming adults. So the China story is very, very special, but to me it is ultimately the black swan story.
Thank you. Mark?
Well, with respect, I'm probably least qualified to comment on this. It's pure speculation, but I think history would show that shipping is cyclical for whatever reason, and I think it probably, from a uninformed point of view, it's probably because it is linked, so intrinsically linked, with the world economy and the sudden inexplicable loss of confidence that sometimes occurs, which then leads to a downturn. So I think where you get major events, if for instance China does lose its confidence or lose its way in whatever way that might be, then I think shipping will follow. But I think Martin's probably, who's now left the stage, is probably the best person to comment on that. But I think it's probably inevitable.
Nude, you have a peculiarly interesting point of view because you are you know something about ship design. You know something about, you're a leading figure in the world of classification societies. What do you think, if you look at your crystal ball, which is the DNV GL crystal ball, what would you pinpoint as the thing to watch?
Yeah, I think it's, first of all, I think what also Martin showed with his graphs is that the supercycle that we enjoyed so much between 2003 and 2008, it will not come back. So I think it's better that we stop talking about the ninth year of the shipping crisis. It's more appropriate to realize that the new normal is very similar to the old normal. And that is something that we all have to adapt to. And then if I take a little bit longer perspective, I would say that there is quite a lot of optimism, but I think we have to move beyond 2020. And the reason why I'm saying that is there are some fundamentals. Every year, the population of the world is growing by 80 million people. Asia will double its export by 2025. And China, even though it's not at the same growth rates as it used to be, is still adding the economy of the Netherlands every year. And if you then think even further about Africa and the developments that can take place there, I think there is ample opportunity to be quite optimistic, but it will take some time for this to happen, and then shipping will be at the heart of that trade. And so I'm optimistic in the longer run.
Now we're going to hear from a lawyer at the end of the row here. Fred Kenny was chief. You were the chief legal officer of the Coast Guard, and now you're, I suppose, the chief legal officer of IMO. What do you see? You're in a unique position as a regulator to tell us what you think we're looking at post after we get through tearing our hair over ballast water management and rending our garments over emissions. We may never get over that, as a matter of fact. But looking ahead through your crystal ball, what do you see as the next big thing? And I hope you're not going to tell us there is none.
Well, thanks.
Use the mic, by the way, if you, it's on, I think, but you just have to.
Okay. Well, thanks, Clay. And I would also, a slight disclaimer, I'm the Director of Legal Affairs and External Relations, which I think it's my latter role that I'm here today. Mm-hmm. So, because primarily interested in outreach to the industry, and I want to thank Nick Baranzas for inviting me here today. This is a really good opportunity because it gives the IMO an opportunity to speak to a segment of the industry that oftentimes doesn't come to the IMO, and it really is an excellent opportunity for us. In terms of the crystal ball, I think the other speakers captured the mood quite well. And when you look at the downturn that began in 2008 with the financial crisis and the subsequent downturn in shipping, the one thing that did continue was the regulatory process, and it continued to move on. Clay, you mentioned ballast water. The Ballast Water Convention entered into force last Friday, and it took 12 years for that convention to enter into force, and I think the economic downturn may have had something to do with that in terms of the delay in member states ratifying that convention. So that may not sound like a good news story, but I think there is a silver lining in there, and that is that as of today, we got two more ratifications this week, there's currently 65 countries representing 73% of the world's tonnage that are now party to the Ballast Water Convention, which is actually a really high level for a convention that just entered into force. And so I think that exemplifies the commitment to global uniform standards delivered by the IMO. Now, where we go in the future with that, I think, is a significant question. The IMO Assembly will meet in November and will adopt a new strategic plan that will include a strategic direction for the organization to carefully consider how new technologies are incorporated into the regulatory process and improving those regulatory processes themselves. I think it's well known that it's very difficult for the regulatory process as it exists today to keep up with the pace of technology. But when we look at things, initiatives like goal-based standards, I think there's hope that we can do that and create some flexibility in the regulatory system to allow innovation and efficiency to occur.
Thanks, Fred. And in responding to you and also to Mark, when we were standing around just as lunch broke up, I had a brief chat with Mark, and he pointed to two things that I think are worth quoting and throwing back at everybody. One is the word digitalization, and the other is automation. And Fred, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think that that is going to raise some regulatory, in fact, I'm sure it already has raised regulatory issues. How do you deal with the increasingly automated chip? How do you deal with the so-called autonomous chip, which we hear about and read about, even though it may never happen? That is the ship with no crew at all, or with a very, very small crew, and the digitalization of many of the operational aspects of a vessel, not just ashore, but it's certainly on the ship, which we're already seeing. Do you think that the state of regulation, as is say the international conventions, many of which have been on the books for a long time, MARPOL, SOLAS, for example, STCW, for example, which is standards, forgive the acronym, Standards of Training, Certification, and Watchkeeping, which is the crewing and crew regulation convention. Do you think those things are going to need a significant upgrading and changing in this galloping digitalization that we're seeing?
I think before we can make the decision as to whether there's going to need to be a significant upgrade, what's going to be required first is a significant and very detailed analysis of the current international regulatory regime to see how autonomous vessels, minimally manned vessels, remotely manned vessels, whatever you wish to call them, or as they are called at the IMO now, maritime autonomous surface ships, or MASS, how those technological advances will fit into the current regulatory system. Now, in June, the Maritime Safety Committee agreed to begin a scoping exercise to determine the extent. There are 53 IMO treaties that impact vessel operations around the world every day. Every single one of those treaties is going to need to be looked at, and the question asked, okay, if you have a truly autonomous vessel, if you have a remotely manned vessel, how is the regulatory system going to be impacted by that? Just a quick example, what if a vessel is in distress in the area of a truly autonomous vessel? International law currently is the master has a duty to respond to that distress call and go to the assistance of those persons in distress. Well, if there's no one on board the ship, whose responsibility is that now? These are the kinds of questions that we're going to need to wrestle with.
Thank you.
This was an issue that came up at a previous meeting that I attended this morning, where we had a gentleman from Rolls-Royce looking at the whole automation.
They're very
semi-automated vessels. He said, look, the technology is there, and within 10 to 15 years, we will see fully automated ocean crossing vessels. There's no doubt about that, to which the law firm who was hosting the seminar said, yeah, but it's going to take more than 10 to 15 years to get the regulatory framework in place for just the reasons that Fred said, which is something I hadn't focused on. That being said, when you look at the regulatory reorganization required for Brexit, and they say that this will have to take place in the next 2 to 3 years, hundreds of thousands of conventions and agreements that have to be amended, big business will drive that, and big business will drive the amendments to the regulatory framework required for this too. So I think it will be achieved, and where there's a will, there's a way.
I happen to agree. I've seen the IMO in two modes, Fred, fast, very fast sometimes, and slower, to put it tactfully. But I suspect things are going to pick up speed, exactly for the reason Mark maybe I'm optimistic, but I really think it will happen. John, you went out on a limb. You said you pointed to China and issues with China, and I sensed a certain frisson of disagreement among the other panel members. But could you say a few more words about why you think that the China we know was the great client of all clients, customer, if you will, certainly for commodity bulk commodities, may not be quite the great customer?
No, my point is that we've built our infrastructure servicing the development of China and with unbridled growth. And many people in this room, China has been the only game in town. Now, China is becoming a mature economy. It's still growing. I'm not saying it's not. But it is now going to be susceptible to downturns and recessions. And its growth is going to ultimately taper off to more normalized growth. And the industry that we have today actually was put in place to service the birth of China. And therefore, yes, you're now in a more mature phase of environment.
I agree with you.
And if you look at the study of demographics, as I say, there's plenty of evidence that the population of China is going to drop dramatically and quickly in the future, which means that China's purchasing power and consuming power is going to rapidly diminish. This is not happening in the next 5-10 years, but it could very well happen towards the end of it. If you commissioned a new building today, it would happen within that lifespan.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you. Newt, you probably know that you're the namesake of a famous English king, who, of course, was Scandinavian. And he is famous in this country for only one thing, unfortunately, namely that he allegedly, but I think certainly did not, but he allegedly commanded the waves to go in the other direction and not roll in on the beach where he was sitting. You are a leader in a leading classification society. Having heard what we've just been talking about, particularly what Fred and Mark have alluded to, where does DNVGL see, and if you, what I'm really asking is, do you have a timeline on autonomous shipping and heavily automated shipping? And is the world ready for that?
Yeah, first of all, I think it's very important to distinguish between unmanned vessels and highly automated.
Correct. Yes, very much so. I tried to do that.
If you talk about automation, I see that there could be, you know, a lot of immediate benefits. If you take, as an example, a tanker where you maybe have four officers attending the engine room, with higher degrees of automation, you could probably reduce that to two officers. And that's already there, an interesting OPEX saving for the ship manager or the owner. If you talk about the unmanned vessels, that is really popular, especially with the media, we are probably talking about mid-2030s before we say have regulations in place. It's not so much a question about the technology, but for sure it's quite a lot of issues around the legislation. And we see that already now, just trying to implement electronic certificates. So there, even at that level, tell me about it.
You know, that's a flag state headache too. I'd like at this point to looking at the audience, ask if there are any questions, and if they are, if you could get the microphone from Olga Bornozzi over here. Because you're not terribly visible with very bright lights, but we'd like to hear what you have to say and whether you have any questions. I can't tell. Could you state your name and your employment if you wish, and make sure it's on.
Yes?
It's on.
I was loud enough. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Nishat Abbas Ramatullah from UCL. And the world I live in, we pretty much look at emissions and emissions in shipping. and I mean greenhouse gas emissions. I wonder what the panel views are on how fast the Paris Agreement might come in and what that would mean for shipping.
Thank you. That's a great question. Who wants to tackle that among the panel? And if anyone else wants to say something from the floor, I see at least one distinguished shipping personality sitting here who I know is going to say something, but we'll wait. Fred, do you have any thoughts on that? I think I can. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but you're not. You can speak as an individual and state that you're not speaking on behalf of the World Organization.
I won't take you up on that offer, Clay. But thanks anyway. No, it's a very good question. As most of the people in the room know, shipping was not included as part of the Paris Agreement that was adopted last year, and nor was aviation, and it was left to the IMO and the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, to come up with plans to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from planes and from ships. And the issue that I see is not that the IMO is not taking action. It's clear that the organization, the member states, and I would say in particular the industry, as represented through the NGOs, very much want to look at the problem and come up with the right solution in a carefully considered way. And in that regard, IMO has adopted a roadmap for developing a strategy to take the already existing initiatives, because shipping was actually the first globally regulated industry to take action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, starting with the adoption of amendments to the MARPOL Annex 6 in 2011, which came into force in 2013. That preceded all other industries. And the roadmap will have an interim strategy developed by the end of next year and a final strategy by 2023. The details of that, of course, will require significant negotiation, but there certainly is a willingness by all parties to engage in that negotiation. The bigger issue that I see, Clay, is one of perception. There is a perception, I think, in the media, by some environmental groups, that shipping is resisting doing something to meet the greenhouse gas emission challenge and to meet the objectives of the Paris Agreement. I don't believe that's true, and I say that from my personal point of view and from my official point of view. I think the issue is how we're messaging that industry-wide and how it's being communicated and how it's being received.
Thank you. Any other questions from the floor or statements from the floor? I'd like to switch to another part of what I mentioned before, which is education. A number of the speakers this morning, particularly the bankers, expressed some skepticism about the question of whether the lessons of the last 10 years have been learned by the shipping community, particularly with regard to the boom and bust and the formerly bloated but still somewhat bloated order book. And the point that was made at one point was that, well, you know, you can train a good manager, you can train someone to know what the pitfalls are, and you can train them to recognize risk when they see it. Does anybody want to comment on that, who is up here? You all had shipping experience of one kind or another. Do you think that you can learn caution and prudence from a book?
Well, we can only comment on crew training, and
that's important, a part of it.
That's something that all of the leading managers invest huge time and effort and money in. And that's not just the initial training, but that's the subsequent training as well on going through their careers. And then when they come ashore, transferring that knowledge into shore-based functions, and then as they progress up the management structure. So I think this invest in education and training is crucial, whether we're talking how to operate a vessel, or whether we're talking about how to run a business. It's all about investing in education. I think that's the distinguishing, that's the differentiator in our business, for sure.
Thank you, Mark. Now, we have a number of distinguished ship owners who are not on the panel who are sitting in the front row, and one of them is Mr. Bob Burke. Don't try to look around. I'm looking at you, Bob. You actually served, you were trained in a famous Merchant Marine Academy. You also sailed, so you've been a seafarer. You've been in finance, GE Capital, and now you're a ship owner. Would you have a Olga? Could you give Bob his Bob is still trying to get away from the microphone. off the top of your head, what do you think are the biggest issues facing the ship owner in this particular box? Is it crew training? Is it management training? Or is it both? Or do you want to say something?
This is like sitting in the front row in church. I'll never do it again. And you can't see the clock, but we can, and there's very little time for me to answer.
Good. You're good at killing the clock. I bet you can do it too, Bob.
And I can filibuster.
Because we don't want to hear from George Savlaris, so I think it's very important that you keep going.
The biggest challenge facing the ship owner is ourselves.
Pardon?
It's ourselves.
The biggest challenge?
Yeah.
Meaning what?
It's the nature of our industry. We're greedy by nature. That's business. And the boom and bust cycle enables people to take risks somewhat on other people's money with a lot of upside. And that encourages more risk-taking. So it's the tragedy of the commons. You know, in the commons, when they have 100 sheep and 100 people, everyone can put one sheep on. And then if I just put one more on and no one else does, I can double my income. And we all do that. And next thing you know, all the sheep are starving. So people say market discipline. The market doesn't have a discipline. You know, it's impossible. And we all run our numbers and make a calculated bet, and something changes that we can't expect, and then we're all back where we started. But that's why we're here, isn't it?
Okay, thanks, Bob. Sure. Now, I think there's time for one quick point or question, but it's got to be quick. Look at the clock. You don't want to get Olga angry at you. Olga, can you give George Savlaris the microphone? Thank you, Bob, for that. I think that's a worthwhile insight. I know you're good at command performances. Stay out of church.
Stay out of the front row.
Do you need a microphone?
Microphone. Oh, sorry.
Okay, you got to listen to me. I'm in charge for another 10 seconds. Then you don't have to. Can you turn it on? No. No.
Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry, you're out of time, George.
Don't worry, I'll be quick and to the point. Listen. On the aspect of education, which is a situation which we've been handling the last few years, and it's a bullet point which, in fact, correlates with what my friend Panagiotis Tsakos agrees to, and he's got much more experience than we all put together, is that with education, you don't go by the textbook. You literally have to have anybody involved with shipping, whether they're on the operations side, even accounting side, whatever side of the business. If you haven't got some seagoing experience to get the culture of what it's like being on a ship with Gale Force 7, to smell the rust, to feel the moment. You cannot really be involved intricately with a shipping operation without having some form of even limited seagoing experience. And that goes for the whole office. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you to the members of our panel. Give them a round of applause, please. And thank you.